today on our Tech for Business podcast. We're in week 3 of Cybersecurity Awareness Month, inching ever closer to Halloween. And we've got a bit of a spooky topic today in end-of-life technology. So Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity, joins us. Can you just quick explain, what does end-of-life mean for businesses and software?
Yep, that it should be tossed out.
Pretty simple.
Yep. This is the version of the garbage, right? It's or the hand-me-down. It's time to finally get rid of it. No, the end-of-life just means that it has reached the end of its supported time frame, right? Is these vendors, you know, depends on whatever the application is, or, you know, server operating system that you're on, they always tend to have a end of life support, you know, and this might be the time that they're introducing new features to it. That might be the time that they're releasing security updates to it. There's various reasons why you'd want to do this. And once it stops receiving new features or security updates, it's end of life. It's time to move on, right? If there are flaws discovered in those applications, there's no more support, right? No one's going to patch it anymore. You need to move on. Yeah. So there, we can get into reasons why this might be delayed in certain organizations or other considerations. But at the end of the day, is the vendors are no longer maintaining that piece of software.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I think it's important to highlight that this is different than updates. This is different than patching. It is totally done. There's nothing happening with this anymore.
Yep. There are cases where you can pay for extended support after its end of life, but you will pay a pretty penny because those vendors want you to upgrade for good reason, right? And so if you are absolutely on something that requires further support, just open up the wallet because it will run you a premium.
Yes, for sure. So I think, I mean, in my personal life, I am sure I have stretched phones and computers and things longer than they should. I imagine businesses at times have done that as well. Can you explain a little bit of the dangers of doing this, of what we're sort of would experience if we don't upgrade?
Yeah. So one of the big ones is going to be your security risks, right? You know, it's the easiest one to kind of identify because as software is out there, we know that humans wrote code. So humans also maybe sometimes write bad code or just didn't anticipate someone finding a way to exploit the software that we've developed. And so this is where we start seeing the concepts of security vulnerabilities come out. Right. And so as people are discovering new ways of exploiting the software to perform other nefarious activities, again, a lot of the times it's just security researchers that are finding them and reporting them. But there's also threat actors that are trying to actively use them against you in order to do, again, malicious intent. And what we see are these vulnerabilities are being published out on the internet, which then, again, there's patches for them that get released, and then when you do your vulnerability scan, it's going to go in and also notify you that these vulnerabilities exist. So there is a giant list of vulnerabilities that get published every single year. All right, it's how all this vulnerability scanning software is able to identify them. And I was just looking it up right before this. So in 2023. There was a total of 29,066 vulnerabilities published out in the world. To date, again, we're only midway through October. We're already at 31,000 vulnerabilities that have been published for various reasons. And there's probably a lot of contributing factors to this. We are developing more software. The world is becoming more interconnected. There's more security researchers out there that are finding the vulnerabilities. So a lot of different reasons, but we know that software, there's more of it, there's more vulnerabilities, we need to continue patching our systems, right? Real world examples of how this has actually been exploited, one of the big ones that we continue to see are firewalls, right? You know, is your public facing firewall and or your public facing system, and those also need to be patched from time to time. And so we did see things, and you know, pick your favorite firewall vendor. They've all had these issues. Is remote code execution. Someone can run code against your firewall with no human interaction required. And so what threat actors are doing is they can just scan the internet, see that your firewall is on an outdated version, and run code against it, or maybe bypass your VPN. You know, there's a lot of different things. So selfish plug, go take a look at the one about eliminating your VPN. VPNs are legacy tech. If that's the first time you've heard about it, there's far better solutions out there these days. It's called Zero Trust Network Access. But again, get rid of your VPN. With that being said, usually the network compromises we still see today in the security industry, at least in the managed services space, is VPN compromises. And it's because there's often either firewalls that are out of date, or you know, users accepting multi-factor pushes when they shouldn't. But in the softer side of it, it's usually the firewall. So
yeah, I was gonna say, and this might be a different podcast, is the malicious code and things like that, probably with the expansion of AI, you know, and these things that are potentially writing all of this code so much faster than we as humans can. I wonder if that number is really going to go up.
And this is, I was at RSA, which is the world's biggest security conference earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And up on stage, they did say that there was some research article that got put out, and it's contested. So take it with a grain of salt. But someone had claimed that of the vulnerabilities that had been released, you know, I think it was within the last year or something like that, or maybe it was the last month. I forgot the exact number, but they claimed that like 75 to 80% of them were able to be cracked using ChatGPT at the time, right? The software developed the code required to be able to exploit the vulnerabilities. People have contested that, said, you know, maybe it wasn't fully sound research. But we do see AI starting to become part of that conversation. We do see tools already out on the marketplace as, you know, automated penetration testing, all that type of stuff. So yes, security risks do play a big part. But some of the other dangers that lie with end-of-life software are compliance risks. So a lot of the different compliance standards do call out, is your software up to date? You know, like I'll just pick on HIPAA and PCI. They require that. There's also legal considerations, right? Is if you had something that was end of life and it was exploited, well, who's at fault? Is it the vendor, or is it yourself? You know, if a patch was pushed out and you didn't do anything with it, is the vendor on the hook for that? Probably not. If you go take a look at some of the insurance, right? You know, sometimes they'll say keep your software up to date. If you go, a lot of the security solutions, they offer some type of, you know, ransomware warranty or anything like that. Go read the exclusions on those ransomware warranties. Chances are they have a good disclaimer in their exclusion that says all software on your system must be up to date at any given point. And if any of the software on your system is out of date, it's nullified, right? You can't claim your warranty. So I don't know if they've ever paid those out, because that is such a large exclusion on a single line item, because no one typically has all their software up to date. So other little dangers, these are more about the usability of the systems rather than security and compliance, is just feature freeze. So this is where you're just not receiving the latest and greatest features, right? Mm-hmm. So the kind of, as we talked about, maybe there are some good quality of life enhancements to the next iteration that you really wish you had. I'll use an example in my past. Is I remember working in Active Directory a long time ago and deleting an account and wishing that I could restore it. Well, Active Directory didn't have a recycle bin at the time, right? And so they introduced it on a later version, but the company I was working for at the time didn't have it. And so that wasn't full end of life. That was just the next version of it. But again, maybe if you're still on that old one, and prevent your own mistakes, you know, use the Active Directory recycle bin. And then also just kind of support is, as technology becomes older, again, your IT staff is adopting and learning the newest technology. And while we're trying not to forget the legacy tech, we are still advancing with the industry. And so, you know, if you ask me to go do support on, you know, Windows 95, XP, Windows 7, I might struggle a little bit because it's been so long since I've used those, but we might still be able to help you. It might just take a little bit longer, right?
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things kind of forcing you to move forward and update your systems, you know, the security, the external, which is like the compliance part of it, and then this internal with those new features and things like that.
Well, I heard at one point that stoplights were still running on like Cobalt for a while. I don't know if that's true anymore, but they needed Cobalt developers to be able to continue, you know, either updating it to a new language or something like that. If you're a COBOL developer today, wow, you are in high demand, you know, or, you know, you can, have a ton of money coming your way because you are one of the few still out there. I actually did know someone that was doing development for embedded microchip on like microcontrollers. Mm-hmm. And there was only 4 jobs nationwide when he went to go apply that still did that. Thankfully, he found one in his state. But it does become also harder for if you're an IT staff to find a job if you're, yeah, you're working on the very, very legacy roles. So.
Interesting. Again, maybe another podcast to talk about how this affects jobs. I mean, does end of life really affect jobs? I mean, I imagine that you're training and growing with the software, you know, and you're probably just going to move on to the next product.
Possibly. The jobs dwindle away, but the money maybe goes up, but you have to mm-hmm. be able to be the one that gets those jobs, right?
For sure. So other than, you know, external information like a company or software telling us that they're going to be moving towards this end of life or compliance telling us to get those updates, what are other sort of warning signs when we're using this software? What are some of those warning signs to know that we're getting to that point?
Ideally, the vendor has told you for about a year and a half, yes, saying, get rid of this, we're deprecating it. You know, I mean, if you go out and take a look at Microsoft's website, they have a whole page dedicated to these are the things that are ending support in 2025, right? And Microsoft tends to kind of follow 2-year major cadences with, you know, minor stuff in between. But if you're a Microsoft shop, they've been telling you for years, we are deprecating this, mm-hmm. right? They have to appease to the masses. So keep up to date with what the vendors are telling you. In terms of support, sometimes there's performance issues. I won't say that it's widespread, is all your systems are going to start slowing down when they reach end of life. That's not usually the case, but it could be, you know, as it was first released, maybe it was pretty well optimized. Maybe after all the stuff has been added to it over the years, it's maybe slowed down. Again, ideally, the developers are making it more stable as reports are coming out. But it is a potential concern. You know, if anything, I'd say more about compatibility issues, because the longer that system sits, you know, and there's newer technology being released, software is being introduced for the new technology. So maybe the developers of those applications that you're trying to run aren't always back supporting your legacy, you know, foundation. And so that's where I would expect most of the issues, which then could potentially play back into the performance issues. So that's some of that. But one of the big things as well is just also being able to do like a software audit within your environment, right? Is, do you even know what you have? Mm-hmm. So as you're approaching end of life, do you know if you have it or not, right? There's plenty of things out there today that can help you out. You know, again, with a managed service provider, we help you. We have tools that are doing software inventory audits of your systems. We can provide reports that say, here is the end of life, you know, and, you know, we're a advisory board gold member of ThreatLocker. And that tool will do a software inventory of all your systems, and it can tell you which country of origin the developers are on. But again, that just helps you make more informed decisions of your software so you can better plan.
Let's talk a little bit more about this planning part of it, because we've talked about all the risks and this worry. There has to be some amount of planning and road mapping and sort of what you do with these next steps when it comes to updating your software. So what does that look like for a business?
Yeah, every business should have some type of 1, 3, 5 year plan of the technology in their environment. So this could take different flavors, right? Maybe you want to stay on-prem and, you know, on-premise your own office. So maybe you want to stay, you know, doing that, and you want to keep all of the control of your servers and workstations. You know, that's fine. Others say that's too much of a burden. You know, we'd run too much risk of our IT individual being on vacation when our Exchange server goes down and no one in the company gets an email, right? Who do you call? Because you manage it. It's not like the cloud. I'll get back to the cloud versus on-prem in a second here. But when it comes to the technology budget is saying, where do we want to be in 5 years? Right. And so kind of setting that vision and then backtracking. So, okay, if we want to be, let's say we are on-prem and we want to go to the cloud, right? If we want to be there in 5 years, what do we need to do over the next 3 years? Right. We know that there's going to be like core business applications or, you know, things that are running our business that are running on-prem. What do we need to do to start moving those core systems off? Or maybe there's little ancillary services that aren't impactful that are easy to move. Maybe we start moving those. CIT did this journey, and so we're now running essentially up in the cloud, and which is great because now, again, our IT staff can go on vacations, and if there is an outage, usually they're resolved much quicker because there's full teams of every application as we're maybe using those different providers. And so it kind of, again, we said the 5 year, 3 year, 1 year is okay. What are the projects, the hardware, the software that we need to purchase to be able to support the business goals? And so being able to put those into a line item, you know, maybe you don't have the money this year, but can you do it next year? And just kind of reallocating those funds. Having a technology roadmap is extremely important. Otherwise, you just kind of tend to keep spinning your wheels in the mud and not really ever moving. Again, technology can work for your business and be a driving factor of actually making it run effectively and efficiently and truly driving the business forward. CIT, you know, we'll go pick on the slogan, right? We make technology work for your business and everything, right? Is IT doesn't have to be a cost center for you. And so that's where aligning it to the business is so critical.
Yeah, for sure. I want to give you an opportunity to share anything else that we've kind of missed, because this is a big topic. But in the future of software, do you see this cycle changing at all, or streamlining at all to kind of make it easier and better for business, or will it always just be the same cycle of end of life?
I'll say the words of this are not of my employers, right? You know, whatever the little disclaimers, but I do see it moving away from this type of end of life cycle at some point. I still think that we're 10, 15 years at least from there, at least for the common, you know, consumer side of things. When it comes to businesses, I think we're many years away from that. I 30, 40, right? You know, and the reason why is large enterprises, they are still going to have critical systems that cannot be online, that cannot be changing. Take a look at some of the industrial systems. You know, is that one piece of hardware although it might be still a Windows 7 machine that for someone looking at it says, oh, just replace it, right? Well, that might be a $3 million automation system, right? It takes significant time and effort and planning to be able to move those types of things. Heck, the planes that we fly on are still running from 1970s hardware, right? And that's, you know, that's 50 years ago now. So, but what we do see is we continue to see software as a service becoming commonplace. And so rather than, I'll go pick on things like Active Directory and Okta, or, you know, Azure AD, you know, pick your favorite cloud identity provider. Is back when you had Active Directory, you were doing your, you know, Forest upgrades and, you know, moving from, you know, a 2008 machine to a 2016 machine or whatever your upgrade cycle looked like. But once you're up in Azure AD or Okta or any of those other cloud identity providers, you're now being just incrementally upgraded as they're releasing new features. You don't see a giant upgrade unless they have to do a big core infrastructure update. So we saw this a little bit with Okta. They had their classic identity engine, and then they went to their new OIE. I don't know what that stands for, but they went from classic to OIE, and there was a big migration upgrade in there, but now it's just iterative. And so that's where I see the world going to. We also see like some of the consumer gaming systems, right? Is you don't have a console, right? It's just connect online and start playing, right? And, you know, maybe things like some of the Chromebooks for students today is you just hop on, it's kind of a glorified web browser, but there's that Chrome OS that, again, is just kind of running. So I think in the future, everything's going to be highly incremental, which has pros and cons too, right? Microsoft said Windows 10 was going to be the last OS you'll ever need. We found out that wasn't the case. But that's what their vision was as well.
For sure. Interesting. That's interesting. So we could maybe potentially one day get out of this cycle, but for now and in the short-term future, it will be this way.
Windows 20 will be the last OS you ever need. So
calling it. Well, we'll come back in 10 years and see if that's true.
Yeah, perfect.
Oh man, awesome. Well, thanks so much, Nate, for joining us today.
If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.